Good morning, Father Christian.
Hey, buddy. Good morning, Rabbi Durbin.
Nothing brightens my day more than being able to be here with you.
I'm going to have to challenge that comment, and I would say your three daughters and your wife definitely overtake the beaming ray of sunshine you get from seeing me.
Not this morning, but generally. No, just joking. So we're here.
This is recorded, right?
Yeah. My wife doesn't listen till the afternoon. So we're here today to talk a really important issue, not only just locally, but certainly nationally as well, is, within our communities, how do we form community? And within the forming of the community, how do those processes and how do those institutions, how do they function? How do they work? How do they coexist amongst themselves? And I know we have a very special guest with us this morning, David Dias, who was a police officer, then the chief of police of here in Stewart, and now the city manager, not to be confused with Commissioner Gordon from Batman. But in some way, Commissioner Gordon from Batman and Adam West obviously worked together to build community, to be in tune with the needs of the community, the successes, the joys, the challenges of community, to really make it a place that people need to be in, people need to support.
Were you in that analogy there saying that you would be Batman to David Dias as Commissioner Gordon?
Well, I'm just saying, Father Anderson, if you want to call me Batman, I'm not going to say no.
Okay. So David Dias, we're going to jump into the show soon, but are you prepared to have Rabbi Durbin as the Batman to your Commissioner Gordon?
Wow. I'm going to head when I leave here and go build that light that it turns on when the bat thing goes up, and you better respond when I hit that light.
Absolutely.
How cool would it be if faith communities could be that reliable and where all you have to do is shine that light out and we all just come running and say, what do you need?
And also, Father Anderson, let's be clear. I mean, you could be Robin.
Wow. I just saw that Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham movie, and that's how it ends. So sorry, spoiler alert, but them teasing each other, who's going to be the Batman and the Robin? And but I am taller. Doesn't make okay. Never mind. So all right, well, David, we're excited to have you on this the podcast today, and to be talking about this. It is just a theme that continually happens on the show about how do we build healthier communities, and definitely how we led by our faith. So are you sure you're ready for this? I mean, we pulled you in. Somehow you said yes.
Yeah, I don't know how I said yes, because I'm really nervous. I'm sitting between a priest and a rabbi, and now I think I'm between Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting more nervous as time goes on.
Well, we're going to take a quick moment of prayer, and then we'll come back and we'll kick this off. So we'll see you in just a few seconds. And listen, if you enjoy this content, it really, another beam of sunlight that comes to us as a priest and a rabbi is when you share this. That is how this podcast grows, is through word of mouth. So if you are listening on a phone, to take a screenshot and send that out to your friends or put it on Instagram. And you can always on Facebook, you can tag us as well. We're a priest and a rabbi podcast. On Twitter, we're a priest, a rabbi, and we will we'd be so grateful. And for you to leave a comment, then we know exactly the other topics that really get you going that you want to hear through the lens of a priest and a rabbi. So share that and find us and tell everyone you can find us on all the different platforms. We'd be so grateful. God bless you, and let's get ready for David.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, everybody. This is Father Christian here at WSTU 1450 on A Priest and a Rabbi. And I am right here in this studio in sunny Stewart, Florida. It just doesn't get sunnier and more humid. But as of today, Rabbi Durbin, it's not that humid, but you still got your hair cut. And so your hair's not going nuts as it normally does in the humid weather.
Humidity does not agree with me.
Right. Now, as a Toronto native, how's the humidity out there?
So, you know, it's interesting. So I was back in the North Country last week. My parents celebrated their 50th anniversary. And,
hey, congratulations.
Well, thank you. All my brothers and their wives and my kids, we flew up and did a special ceremony for them, and it was great. I think the best thing that we had when we were there was the 25 to 30 degree difference in temperature. You know, we wake up in the morning, it's in the low 60s, you know, the day progresses, it's 74 degrees. There is humidity, just not so much humidity, but it was a nice escape and a nice little break from the 106 degree weather we've had. And although I did read a report the other day, I think it was yesterday, that said July was on record the hottest month that Florida has had in a very, very, very long time.
Well, yeah, the States has been recording, or I think the Globe. Miggity Mike, you've been hearing all the headlines, isn't it?
We had it this morning in the news. It was the hottest globally with 1.71 degrees Fahrenheit higher than normal, but locally on the Treasure Coast only 0.4 degrees higher than normal.
Still hot.
Yes.
And humidity at 90%. What are you going to do?
Yeah, you just wake up, you take out the butter knife, and you cut your way through the outdoor once you leave your house.
We had an incident about a month ago where, you know, they say to be a true Floridian means to understand and to have the opportunity to dish out a tremendous amount of money when your air conditioner goes. And of course, our air conditioner went a month ago. Of course, why would it ever go out in November, December, January, where it could be relatively pleasant, but went out when it was 100 degrees. So our house kind of,
yeah,
88 degrees in humidity. I could grow palm trees in my living room, but now we're nice and cool.
Yes, we're nice and cool, and we're nice and cool here in the studio. Today, we want to jump right into a theme that has come up a lot with my wonderful colleague, the Rabbi Matthew Durbin, that we've talked a lot about community development, community building, specifically in the lens of how do we do that as religious leaders? How do we do that within our own religious communities? How are we doing that within the church, within the temple? But then also then, what are the effective ways of how we can serve the community around us? How do we not just get caught up in our own silos, which often happens within our religious households and houses of worship, that we really kind of get really good at serving our own like tribe, but then we lack sometimes of really focusing and saying, what does my community need and how does our religious community serve? What is our call? And so we want to continue that, especially we've also been looking at throughout the weeks in the past about things that can cause us to divide our own personal communities, whether it's preaching and teaching politics from the pulpit. We talked about that in past episodes. We've talked about other divisive natures of rhetoric and talk, and how do we take that on as religious leaders?
And I think some of the challenges with it as well is, although within faith communities, I think it's also within the congregation, whether it be the church or the synagogue, there's so much in our local regional area of how do we get involved. You know, how do we find, you know, those pieces that are really pressing in our communities? How do we align ourselves with other, say, church organizations or you know, the city itself? How do we get involved? I think is
you know. And the unified aspect of doing that. You yourself have started and invited people to launch interfaith gatherings. There have been other ones. There's a ministry alliance that is in town, which is Christian pastors, a lot of them from Eastward. But the challenge is still within the faith communities is how do you unify these different traditions? Mm-hmm. How do you unify folks who are just feel already overwhelmed, might be working a couple jobs as ministers, as rabbis, and so there is a challenge there of just unifying folks who might have different theological views. Mm-hmm. So they might have different ways of approaching community. So there's it's not, you know, community development is a hot buzzword to be a community developer, community organizer. It's all about unity and community, but we know that it's not this primrose path. It's not very easy. So we wanted to bring in someone in Stuart, Florida, who has a tremendous amount of experience, who has really done a variety of different roles. Let's just say he's also been a police officer, maybe even a chief of police. And, well, let's just throw in their city manager. Also quite a great dresser, wears a great goatee when he's in the mood. So I think, who would that be, Rabbi Durbin?
You picked the wrong guest.
He shaved his goatee, but we still got David Dias here today, city manager here of Stuart, Florida, who's just been so gracious to offer his time. He's got a lot going on. He had lunch with us the other day, and here he's on the air. So, David Dias, thank you so much for being on A Priest and a Rabbi.
Thank you for having me. And I just want to go back to the weather real quick. So I just got to spend some time in Wisconsin and the UP up in that area. And after living in Florida all my life, 50 years, now I know why snowbirds make that trip back and forth every single year, because it is really nice in the north.
Oh, my gosh. It's so nice. We were just on Ecuador for a mission trip, and it was just like, oh, it's beautiful. 60s and 70s. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. All right. So, David, we want to know more about you, because you have your resume definitely shows a passion for community, a passion to serve the community. You were a police officer for, should we say,
28 and a half years.
28 and a half years. And then does that include being the chief of police?
Yes, sir.
All right. So then you were chief of police for seven?
6 years.
6 years. And then went from there straight into being elected or chosen.
Appointed.
Thank you. Enthroned?
Yeah, enthroned. I think that's
ordained?
Rabbi Durbin already picked that.
Commissioner Gordon.
There it is.
So then Commissioner Gordon becomes city manager. And now you've been city manager of Stuart for 7 years? No, two years.
No, city manager for 1 year. Just hitting my 1 year anniversary in October.
Yay! Okay, so give us this. Let's start right from the beginning. Where did the thought come in from you to become a police officer?
Oh man, I've always had that desire ever since I was a kid playing, you know, cops and robbers on the street. I've always had this passion to be a police officer, and as I got a little older, you know, relatives, friends would be like, oh, you're too scrawny, you're never going to be a cop, you're this little scrawny kid, is never going to happen. And
great encouragement.
Yes,
good side coaching.
I got everything but encouragement to do it, but maybe that's what drove me to it. And I actually kind of got a little lucky, and then I fell into a job where everybody that worked at that place was a reserve police officer for the Stuart Police Department, and that's how I kind of got my foot in the door.
All right. So you got in there, you did the police academy?
We went to the Reserve
just
Academy
like the movie?
First, just like the movie, and then went to the Police Academy. It wasn't as funny or as fun as the movie was, but went to the Police Academy and started as looking like a 12-year-old driving a police car.
See, what, you have a baby face? Is that what you're saying?
At least back then I did. I don't know if so sure about now, but back then I looked very young. I remember one time having a writer riding with me thinking, and they asked if, you may not probably remember this, 21 Jump Street. They thought I was an undercover in the school system.
Are you serious?
Yes, mm-hmm.
They thought you were pulling a Johnny Depp, huh?
Yes, they did.
You're a babyface Johnny Depp.
Yep.
So you got a lot of titles going on today.
Yeah.
Commissioner Gordon, babyface Johnny Depp.
I'm sure it's not over either.
No, it's young. We're just starting. Grab your coffee.
I'm a little nervous here. I feel unworthy. I'm sitting between a rabbi and a priest. I feel a little... Whew, sweat.
Yeah. The present company included. So every time I get around the rabbi, I start sweating too, because he's a force of nature.
Yes.
Okay. So you're a police officer, and then right when what's the biggest surprises once you get on the force? You're like, oh wow, this isn't like being babyface 8-year-old running around playing cops and robbers. This is about now. This is about this.
I think the biggest surprise is how much. I hate to say this, but boredom there can be in law enforcement. So when you watch cops and all those kind of TV shows, you think it's like that all the time, 24/7, but it's not. There's a lot of mundane, you know, the paperwork, the work in the, you know, fender bender, the mundane stuff. It's actually very short spurts of adrenaline rushes and of stuff that happens that's, you know, in progress or, you know, what a cop would consider exciting.
Sure. So. Sounds like... working on a movie.
Yeah.
When you're on a movie set, you just hurry up to wait.
Yep,
because exactly. There's so much stuff that has to happen. You're waiting around a lot. And then also, okay, now, action. Go. Okay, now go sit down for another 2 hours.
Right.
But, all right, cool. So there's a boredom. You work through that. But now, while you are – so the passion that's leading you to get up every day while you're a police officer, is it more just this excitement and thrill that's been building inside of you? Or was there other things that were – that were driving you to get out of bed and say, this is why I do what I do?
You know, I think the most rewarding part of that time period when I was in a patrol officer and even a sergeant on a shift was when you had the opportunity to actually help someone in need or to help an individual in crisis. And, you know, we think about the big crises, you know, somebody holding a gun to somebody or whatever. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the little old lady who has the onsets of dementia and has nothing in her refrigerator, and you help to make sure that she's fed until you can get services in there or something. You know, those types of opportunities come across law enforcement officers all the time, public safety in general, also fire rescue as well. And those type of opportunities and being able to touch those opportunities and to resolve them, to me, was probably the thing I remember the most of those days. Not the in-progress stuff. It's those little incidents like that that we are able to actually help someone in need that, that kind of resonate in my memory.
And was there a lot of training and that went into how do you deal with these more almost more public service opportunities where you are helping the woman with dementia, where you are working with those who are homeless, or and you really become more the ambassador or the person who's on the boots on the ground, while the other services can get there to really provide more. But is there a certain training? Because those need a certain amount of tact and they need compassion and empathy. And also to be really aware of the social services. I mean, it sounds a lot like what happens a lot of times for Rabbi, you and I on any given day, what things that walk into your office and issues that walk into your office, not people, but just how do you effectively deal with that, right? And so was there training that came with that, or was that more just like, hey, you got to kind of, you get thrown out there and just figure it out on your own?
A lot of it is figuring out on your own is recognition. I mean, there is training, you know, us at our agency, we do training every month. And some of that is, you know, the tactical training, and some of it is the social training and the community type training of all different types. Everything from how to deal with autistic kids and that sort of thing, all the way to how to communicate with the different economic, socioeconomic classes. So there's a lot of training that officers get on a regular basis. Not anything specific, like you're always going to come across a situation that you're not going to have training for, because the job changes constantly and every encounter is not the same. So there's a lot of it that is within the individual for them to have, you know, the desire to be a part of that person's life or intervene in that person's life to try to make it better for them.
Because it seems as there's a, to be a police officer, there's this dual role you have. One of them is the protector, right? And what we sometimes see from our own headlines, like the enforcer, the protector, the security, those who have to make sure the rules are being followed. So there's that part, and the protector of our society. They've been, you know, police officers have been instilled with this responsibility, been trained for it. But there's also this other part, though, with this community liaison and building trust. And building deep relationships with folks, not just so you can do better enforcement, but you can almost be the hands and arms of the city itself, because you're really the ones who are you're the boots on the ground that are making these relationships. But how other communities might, or people from the community might relate to you, really depends where you're at, which neighborhood, and then how deep are those relationships? How do you deal with that challenge where some folks see you as, yes, you have to be the person who has to be, I hate to keep using the word enforcer, but you're the one who has to really uphold the law, or be, and then the other person has to be more of a person of compassion and of understanding, of almost more from like social services.
Well, I mean, the law enforcer side, you know, that's our primary role, and it's very important. And that's the part that everybody in the public sees the most, because that's what, you know, the TV news picks up on. That's what the person's cell phone video that they're posting on social media focuses on. And so a lot of the social aspects that law enforcement do and the helping hand stuff that we do never really gets out there until more recently, when law enforcement basically added marketer to their title. Mm-hmm. We basically had to become marketers of that side of things that we do so that the general public, and we had to market it ourselves. And so when we started marketing ourselves through social media and other avenues is when the news media and stuff started picking up on it and started showing more of those kind of stories. But prior to that, the only thing you ever saw was the enforcement side. Mm-hmm. So that's how people knew cops. And that's how, of course, that's how stereotypes develop.
And it's interesting to see it from that perspective too, that, you know, obviously to serve and protect obviously is, you know, the number one aim and goal for law enforcement. But also, you know, in the last, you know, couple of years, to be able to see, you know, Stewart Police has their own Facebook page in terms of making arrests or you know, beyond the arrest part in terms of the community building.
Right.
You know, look what we've done today. And I think it's a great self-promotion. I think it also removes the stigma of the department.
Yeah.
You know, I think for, I mean, I'll speak personally here. I mean, even though I may have not done anything wrong, the second I see flashing lights, my heart stops.
So do I.
Right? That's encouraging. It's good to know. But I think, you know, to remove that stigma and not just, you know, regionally and locally, but certainly, you know, nationally of, you know, it's the police are not the enemy. It is, they're here to help and they are community. I mean, like you said, you know, you are, you know, the boots on the ground that see the day-to-day operations, that see the city, sees people as people and trying to offer help and support. You know, Father Christian, to go back on your comment, which I think is actually an interesting one, is, you know, the resources that are out there for those that are in need. And I think for both of our professions, you know, it is about acclimating ourselves with our own area. What resources are available? I mean, there's so many. You know, if we look at young children, if we look at, senior citizens that are in trouble or in need, I mean, there are organizations that are in Stewart and certainly in Martin County that are able to offer assistance and help. But I think we, as clergy and certainly as, you know, city manager in terms of knowing what they are and to whom they serve so that we can best refer and try and get help to those that need it. You know, it's interesting when you look at the word community. I mean, community itself comes from the word common. And I think that there's something really beautiful about that, of the commonality that we all share. We live in this area. We love where we live. I mean, it is, although it is, you know, oppressively hot here, if it is so oppressively hot in the summer, it just means that the ground here in Florida is warming up so much so that in December, January, and February, when it is freezing in the north, it is nice and pleasant here. But I think beyond that, it's something about, if we live in this area and we call this area home, what can we do communally and amongst ourselves that gives us passion, that says, I'm proud of where we live and I don't want it to go a different way. We want to be able to, you know, to really make us shine in terms of, you know, what we can offer and how we can best serve the needs of others in our area.
And you're hitting on a theme that the big reason why we invited you, we really wanted you to have you on the show, David, is as clergy members, the scripture calls us. I mean, it's just community, community, community. The walk of faith is not a solo act. For a very small percentage, 0.05% are called to be in caves or go to monasteries and do their own thing, right? But the rest of us are just meant to really look out for one another, to love one another, and to serve and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And it is that responsibility that gets lost. And I think the Western culture, specifically the culture in the U.S., we've talked about it before on the show, is that the culture here in the States is more of a rugged individualism. That's how we are founded and grounded. That's a lot of our principles are set upon that, as opposed to when you go to other countries where it's much more of a groupistic mentality, where it is the village that really rises up and it's everyone is in sync, and it's about being a part of the group and looking out for the group. So that's a challenge I find a lot of times within just being a priest, is that there's the Christian movement, and I think we're right there, I think Judeo-Christian values will run up against that because in the States, because there's more about individualism and the rugged individualism. So what have been the challenges, I would say, as now that you graduated, and I don't want to forget about how you made this leap from to chief of police to city manager, but what are the challenges you see of trying to get everyone in on that goal of saying, hey, we're all in this together. Like we all love, we're here together, and we need to celebrate this area together. And we all need to have our hands, get our hands dirty with helping build this community that we've all in. And Stuart, we're all going to look different. We're black, white, rich, poor, different religions, different political views. My gosh. So how as a city manager do you begin to try to create it where it's about Stuart, it's about this community, and we're all in this together?
Well, I think when you're talking that vast of a nature that you just explained there, for me, it's always been try to ride in the middle. You know, don't sway one way or another to one view or the other, because once you do that, you lose the other side of the story, or the other side of the argument. And unfortunately, that's where we're at right now, as you were just explaining, with the divisiveness and the arguments, whether it's politics or whether it's economic or whatever the situation is, or white, black, or cop, citizen, or whatever it is, trying to stay the middle balanced so that you can see both sides of the story is very important, because you can go into, and I'm speaking back as a police officer, you know, you can go into a neighborhood and see a community that are committing crimes, but it's a very small percentage of that community there and committing those crimes. And you want to treat that whole community as criminals, which is the wrong way to look at that neighborhood or that community. And so the right way to do it is to try to stay in the middle and say, okay, there's two sides to this story within the community, and we need to focus our efforts on helping those who are stuck here by circumstance and to help them to have a neighborhood or a community that they're proud of staying in or living in. And riding riding the middle, but being in the middle of the divisiveness is oh so important. I think I talked to you guys about this at lunch the other day. If you spend your time watching one newscast, or you spend your time only with one group of people who are bashing this other group of people, you are going to eventually believe what they believe. You're going to fall into that thought process itself. You may be a part of that to try to convince them of other views, but if you stay there and commiserate with that point of view long enough, you're going to believe that point of view, rather than trying to have an open mind about what's going on and trying to stay in the center of the conversation.
If you just tuned in, we're here with David Dias, city manager here at Stuart, Florida, and former chief of police. The phone number here is 772-220-9788, 772-220-9788. If you have questions for David, particularly about how to develop and build community and building a richer community in a community that is rich just in communal love here in Stuart, Florida. So how do you then, what you just said about riding the middle and being right there, and you yourself, David, you're a good model and a leader for this, and I can see where you were enthroned as a city manager, as Commissioner Gordon here. but because you're a pretty level-headed guy. You're a pretty level-headed dude. You got a really great, gentle demeanor. And I could see where it doesn't come across as aggressive or pushy, and you're a good listener. And so that is a great model for us now, I mean, just in this country, for us all to practice and to have that willingness and openness. I want to hear both sides. I want to hear what's going on. I'm not going to allow whether my own personal ideology or thoughts to get in the way to really sway me to another side. How do you begin to now? You are the city manager, right? So you're the head.
So let's if we could just go back just to the terminology, yes. Right? City manager. So David, what does that encompass? What does that mean? Just for those that may not be familiar.
So the city manager or the county administrator, similar, same jobs, different titles, a little bit, is basically the CEO of a corporation. So I am in charge of all of the departments within the city now. So there's 253 employees come October 1. And so all of those employees are my responsibility. And there's 9 different departments. And so now it's, you know, it's police, it's fire, it's public works, it's human resources, it's finance. All of those report to me. And then I report to the commission. So the city commission, the 5 commissioners, set policy or direction, and then it's my job to make sure it's carried out.
Interesting. And that leap from, well, and I would say that the leap from being chief of police to being city manager. Is that a leap that happens often?
It happened more often than what I thought. You know, in previous years, I've only knew of one person that did it. And then the same year that it happened with me, it happened to three others down in Palm Beach County. So it's kind of, it does happen. It just seems like it happened within that year more often than not. It depends, I think, probably, like you said, on the person and their personality more than anything else. But it does happen, because when you're in law enforcement, you become very good if you rise to the top, or if you move through the ranks, you probably become very good at crisis management and being able to come up with solutions quick on your feet, because cops make a lot of quick decisions. Mm-hmm. And so that process and how you process those decisions and handle those crisis management very much can relate into having to run an entire city.
And how much, when you were on the job as a police officer, it sounds like probably in just the times when I've seen police officers right in the middle of an issue, it's just so much is just your ability to communicate well, your ability to be able to handle a situation, your ability to be able to negotiate, your ability to take someone who's so emotional or very hot. You've got two different parties that are kind of losing it right here. And how do you get in the middle of that and calm people down? And there's times you got to be a little more forceful with your demeanor and with your language. And there's other times you just got to be like, okay, I hear you. I'm being compassionate. I mean, that's a huge part of the job. And if you don't have those skills, that's going to get a little hairy.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very good point out there, because that, and any law enforcement officer has been in that situation a lot. And so how you handle that and the calming of the anger is huge in conflict resolution.
How much of that, so when you became chief of police, which when that happened, where do you go into the running for that, or how does that work?
For the chief of police, yeah. So the city manager appoints each of the department directors. And the chief of police basically is a department director. And so when the... they have many options. So they can promote from within or hire from within, or they can do searches for an external. And I was fortunate enough I was the assistant chief prior to that, and I was fortunate enough where they promoted me directly to the seat without doing a search.
Okay. And when you came into that position, how do you then begin to instill these traits that you're talking about, of being one who's willing to ride the middle, one who's willing to listen to both sides, who's willing to stay patient and calm and grounded in the midst of chaos that's happening? Was that when you came chief of police saying, this is a culture I got to create, or maybe it was already there, or did you feel like you had to do some work there with whether it's workshops or training, or how's that work?
I think it's inherently built into us as our experiences as we're coming up through life. And so I don't think it's any one particular class. Now, I mean, obviously, I took classes as an assistant police chief that helped with different learning processes. But I think that how you your personality ends up being to have those same kind of views happens through your life as you're growing up in your life experiences. Hmm. My faith has a lot to do with that as well.
Right. We like that, Rabbi, don't we?
We do. We do. And, it is interesting, too, David, given your experience and certainly your life, growing up here, as opposed to, the fair amount within Florida that are transplants that have come from other cities, other states, and made Florida home. This has always been your home.
Right.
So in terms of also watching Martin County incrementally grow, develop, areas that were once farmland and housing of those things out west to be able to be developed now. From your experience in terms of how this community has built itself, must be remarkable for you to reflect on a whole life of growing up and making Martin County home.
Yeah, I mean, as I was growing up and even in my early years throughout, my law enforcement career, before I got into the administration side in law enforcement, I didn't think about those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing my job, going along. It's not until you kind of get in an administrative role where you start realizing or thinking about growth and population and what that does to resources and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it changed, starts changing your mindset on that sort of stuff. And while, I think controlled growth for us in Martin County has kind of always been the outlook. And I think that for the most part, Martin County's done a great job of doing that. And the city of Stewart has always taken the standpoint of, you know, we are the county seat of Martin County, and we are the urban cluster of the county. And so we've taken a mindset more of a little higher density within the city, the central city part of it, than the rest of the county has, which is a little more suburban.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here, and when we get back, we want to get into, now that we've learned about you and a little bit about your philosophy of how to approach it, we've learned about your personality, how that it makes sense, how you would step into the seat, getting into really the challenges that now as a city manager of community development, where you do have, I mean, just here in Stewart, we have different classes, different races, different cultures that are going on, different needs. Is there gentrification? Is there an issue of gentrification? How do you, as a city manager, help instill and build and listen to all these different needs in the community? Everyone's got their different needs. And what is that like? Because then, and what can we learn from that as folks who are also trying to develop community from the work that you're doing on the ground? So that's going to be right when we get back. Again, the number here is 772-220-9788. Give us a call if you have any questions or comments about the just development of community, because we got a former chief of police and a city manager here with a boatload of knowledge. We'll see you in a second.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe, and please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call in to the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find a relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was What Do Women Really Want in a Man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asks, though, is that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stewart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Well, welcome back to the second part of A Priest and a Rabbi here on WSTU 1450. This is Father Christian from St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and also with the ever dashing Rabbi Durbin over at Beth Hayam Temple. So we are, or Temple Beth Hayam. So we are a priest and a rabbi, and we just love being a part of the community here in Martin County and bringing on guests who, in their very different aspects and ways of approaching of how do we find more unity and community, and we like to reflect on that through our own faith perspectives. And today we're continuing our interview with David Dias, a city manager here of Stuart, who also was a former chief of police, who also was a police officer for many years, who also is a rabid Cleveland Browns fan, and that's why
no.
I really like him a lot. That's
no.
why I really, really wanted to bring him on here, like myself.
I grew up here. It's Miami Dolphins all the way. Sorry, fans.
Yes. He's saying that.
We apologize to you, actually, for
yes.
being a Dolphins fan.
Well, hey, somebody's got to do it.
So, David, it's great to have you here. It's so funny. I just really got a text from my wife who said,
uh-oh.
Can you please stop talking and allow David to talk more? Because we really want to hear what he has to say.
Wow.
Yeah. She actually indicted also the rabbi, but I'll take the hit on this one too. She said, you guys need to quiet down because I think you have such a fountain of knowledge here and wisdom.
That.
And so we're curious here because that's the theme of the show. How do we build community? So tell me, now that you've had this great journey so far and you're here as a city manager and you have this town that has many different needs and you have people on your door who are requesting different things and need different things, let's talk about balance. How do you balance all the different needs? So you, when you go from all the different neighborhoods from all over the place, from Indian Town to East Stuart, you know all the different names of the neighborhoods than myself, but everyone's got these different needs. How do you begin to even approach that of saying, I hear you, and let's try to do something about that.
Yeah. That's difficult. It's hard. And first, I want to say, like, you're very good at this. Before you put the collar on, were you like a radio show host or something? I mean, some kind of a thing prior to this life. So I have to tell you, you have to pick the things that you can affect. So when, like you said, a lot of different things come at you from different directions, and you know pretty quickly what you can have an effect on and what you can't have an effect on. So it's very much trying to pick out what can you resolve and how quickly can you resolve those issues to work on that particular situation. And some of it's very small and very easy, and it's just, you know, other people would maybe ignore it or whatever. But if you address it and you take care of that quick, easy solution fast, at least something is getting done. Mm. It may not be the bigger item that the community or that particular neighborhood wants to get done, but at least something is getting done rather than nothing getting done. This particular job that I'm in now, city manager, it's one of those deals, I think I told you guys this, where you think, hey, my boss doesn't do anything. He sits in his office and has meetings and drinks coffee, until I got in the seat and I'm like, wow, this is a really busy job. I mean, my wife is sometimes like, why are you getting home so late? It's, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And it's like, there's a lot to do. Mm. There's a lot to do, a lot of work out there. The differences between the two jobs, I will tell you, is I felt that I was more in touch with the community because it was more boots on the ground as the police chief,
right,
than in this position where you're dealing with a whole variety of people and a whole variety of neighborhoods and a whole variety of issues, and you're tied up in meetings behind a desk a lot. So you're less boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm. So when David, when you took the position of city manager, you know, before day one of, you know, job starts, did you outline for yourself in terms of what are my priorities? What change do I want to see as I enter into this new position? As opposed to, I would assume that, you know, a lot of city managers who enter into the position have their own goals that they want to kind of address and come to light. But I would think that given your experience, not only as chief of police, but also as a police officer and one who has also been invested and born and raised in this county, to be able to say, okay, these are my priorities. This is what I want to make happen or to change.
Well, I always like to go back to the roots. So when I became the police chief, I went back to serve and protect. I went back to the basics of law enforcement. You know, we'd come up with all these fancy mottos or whatever. I wanted to go back to the basics of serve and protect. And so when I've come into this position, you know, I looked at, you know, what does government do? What is our basic function? And so I went to the mentality of live, work, play. You know, we're here to provide a good environment for housing, for living, mm-hmm. a good environment for an economics for work, and a good area for people to recreate, to play, to want to come to Stuart, to have whatever it may be, athletics or have fun time. I think I need to add worship to my live, work, play, worship.
Yeah. So, when you're around a priest and a rabbi.
Yes, I had to throw that in there. But I like to go back to the basics and start from the beginning and try to build on those, the whatever the basics are, and then build out from there, rather than pick up where the last person left off.
Sure. Well, we have our first caller in. We have Mr. Tom, who's
so it's not your wife calling to say
we don't know. She might be disguising it as a person named Tom. But Tom, welcome to A Priest and a Rabbi. We got David Dias here, and it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'd like to give Dias some history about Stuart. I've lived in Martin County most of my life, and most of the commissioners are in bed with the developers. It really bothers me. A few years ago, a guy that had a lot, and he was allowed to put two units on it, he wanted to put four units on it, and they wouldn't let him, and he raised hell. He says, "Will you?" Some of the people that had lots, they abided by the comprehensive land use plan, and some didn't. And so he jumped up and down, and finally, long story short, they caved in, and they just ignored their comprehensive land use plan and just let the developers put whatever they want on there. And several years ago, some of the toward the black community, there was lots of lots that needed to be developed, and they allow 30 units on 1 acre, and the developer has to provide one parking space. And I got up and said, "Listen, this is crazy. One parking space for 30 units on 1 acre?" And they said, "Well, they can park in the street." I said, "Jesus, they're going to be rioting in the street for those. How many parking spaces on two streets within an..." Don't you think that's insane?
Yeah, I mean, there's that would be another deal where they went outside either their LDCs or their comp plan because they allowed that to occur, because there is a certain number of parking spaces per unit that are, like in our code, that are required by code. I don't know where that particular location is at, but I know in our African-American community, there's no development over there that's 30 units an acre, so I'm not quite sure what you're talking about.
No kidding, because maybe did they change it? It was, and they didn't deny that there was going to be a lot. They let the developers put 30 units on, you know, on 1 acre. They didn't deny it. I mean, it happened. It just blew me away.
Yeah, I don't know which development specifically you're talking about. I mean, a lot of people, because the address says Stuart, a lot of people think that it's in Stuart, when actually there's the city of Stuart, which is incorporated, and then there's unincorporated Stuart that's not within the city. So there's a lot of places where they think that, you know, the address says Stuart, so it's in Stuart, when it's actually not. And most of what you're talking about is probably was done by a commission, which, you know, staff, we can't control commissions. They're elected by the people, and for, you know, they have the ultimate say in what occurs within, you know, the LDRs or the comp plan. So, you know, that's a people's situation to
get new commissioners. Well, they can amend it, and that's what they did when a few years ago, when that one gentleman wanted to put four units, and me and this nurse, we fought tooth and nail, and they just, all the commissioners ignored us and just voted to amend the comprehensive land use plan. And you know, the more people, one of the commissioners, he's not there anymore, and he says, "Well, we need more money, Tom." More money for what? And he says, I said, "More money for more roads, more police, more firemen. That's what you have to do when you just keep increasing the population. Growth doesn't pay for itself." And it's just, you know, it's just a shame that that, you know, they keep saying, "Well, we need more money, so we have to give the, we have to bring more units into the plan." Well, I got that off my chest.
And we thank you, Tom, for giving us a call here.
I remember when we used to. I used to know when the season was on because of the traffic. Now you can't tell. We got terrible traffic all the time.
Sure.
And right now the developers, I think, own four of the five county commissioners. So get ready for Martin County to turn into another Broward County. It's going to happen in the next 30 years, I predict.
Well, thank you for calling in. My man, I really appreciate it, Tom.
Have a nice day.
God bless. Yeah, so, I mean, it was nice to be able to see that in action, watching you as, there you go. I mean, that's your job right there. You're going to have folks who come in with definite needs and opinions and thoughts and concerns, and watching you as even keel, David, you know, how do you just to hear and to,
And there's two sides to even that story. So, you know, you get those who have the same concerns that Tom has, and they're valid concerns. And then you have an opposite side to that, that want more growth and they want more population and they want more urbanism living. You know, we often don't think about what the millennial groups, the next generation desires or wants, and you know, they're becoming adults, and so what their needs are and what their desires are. This Azul apartment complex here is a perfect example of the battle back and forth. It doesn't belong there. It's too high density. And then you have another group that says it's beautiful and it's the perfect spot for it. So you've always got two sides of every story.
And so you are balancing a lot.
Yes, it's a big balancing act.
So I think the rabbi and I can relate to that just within our own congregations. And how does your faith come in to help you with that ability just to balance all these different points of view, but at the same time, stick to that vision that you have? You have that vision of work, play, live, and worship. How does your faith come into play to help guide you?
I think, you know, I've always had gone off of the, well, I shouldn't say always, I made the decision at one point in my life that I was going to follow a role of servant leadership. And so with that, I feel that it's my responsibility to not be, you know, do what I say, not what I do, and direct people, but rather be willing and do, get down in the dirt and do it, you know, be a part of it and try to show example of those things that need to be done by doing it yourself. My faith and my background, it plays a role in, like, if you're a reader of the scripture, and you know, it plays a role in how you should interact with people and have discussions and resolve issues. I've been in the church all my life. I grew up in a church, and it wasn't like there's stories out there of people who had a bad life and then, you know, converted and changed their life. And then there's people like me who just have kind of grown up in the church all their life throughout there. So there wasn't like a really defining moment. It's just come over a long time. And I credit my wife. She's an avid studier of the Bible, and she make sure that I am as well, or tries to make sure that I am. I don't read nearly as much as she does, but I think that that shaping, how I said, how we grow up and how that is ends up being who we are with our personality. I believe my faith was a big part of that process.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Biggest challenge you face right now is as a city manager.
You know, the way we always talk, like he just talked about, we need more money, and you know, growth doesn't pay for itself, and he is correct to an extent. That's Tom, as far as does growth pay for itself. There's arguments on both sides of that as well, and he to a point is correct. Money management is important. So having the resources to accomplish or to keep steady that live, work, play mentality or philosophy is always a challenge. It's a challenge for, I think, probably every community. You don't want to overtax your citizens, and you don't want to be a burden on your citizens as a government, but you also want to have enough there to provide the play portion or to be able to have good roads or whatever the case may be. So that balancing act is a constant. I would say that my biggest challenge has always been as it relates to economics of this community. You know, you have very wealthy people in this community, you have middle class in this community, and you have poor people in this community. And trying to help those who need the helping hand goes along with my philosophy on servant leadership. And I've tried throughout my life or throughout my career to kind of focus on that more than anything.
And just, you know, we're here at the end of the show. We just have a couple minutes left. But one thing is, if we could touch upon it real briefly, is with that, the fear of gentrification that happens.
Yes.
And so then those in poor neighborhoods, when there are upgrades and there's things that can happen, when you go into a community that needs a little more development and say, oh, great, we have this plan. We want to do some development. We know we see this over near 10th Street. That there is a concern of saying, well, if you do that, though, yeah, it's going to look a lot nicer, but then the property value is going to go up, and then we're not going to be able to afford to live there. And then is this gentrification? Are we getting pushed out? How do you, you know, and I know we only got a couple minutes here, but how do you approach that topic and that issue?
That's a very difficult issue. So I tried to focus on that recently with trying to change some codes to allow for property owners in a lower income area to be able to build housing. There's a lot of vacant lots there, and so I've heard throughout my career many times we need housing that's affordable, and so we tried to do something with that housing affordability. And even though we went out and we had three meetings with the community and stuff, you know, we failed in our communications approach because the community came out against it, and the resolve for me is we're not going to move forward. You know, we're going to back off. It's, we're not going to thrust it down their throat. That's if they don't want it, we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Because it is, in the end, their community. And that's not just that's for any community. That's for any neighborhood. And we have a couple of different neighborhoods that are economically challenged. You know, we have a trailer park that's economically challenged within the city that I'd like to do a little more focusing on as well, with trying to help and assist them as well. And I think that we all, including the faith-based community, can play a role in that.
Yeah, and so that's always a conversation that the rabbi and I definitely agree with, is how do we continue, all of us as clergy, begin to just offer and be in communication with you and your office, say, what can we do? How do we partner with you so we don't get stuck in our own silos, in our own personal communities, at our own churches and temples, and just say, how do we serve you? And I think that communication line needs to be, we could do a better job of facilitating that, of saying, how do we serve you and helping you do this vision of work, live, play, and worship with it. So, David, we are just so grateful for you to take the time to be on here. You're always welcome to come back on the show. We love the bridge of saying, how do we make this bridge from, we talk about community a lot through the lens of from our faith perspective, but then let's get to the boots on the ground and what does it mean as a civic leader of a community. Rabbi, thoughts on this whole show?
I mean, interesting, as we conclude today, just David, please know that you certainly have partnerships with St. Mary's, not that I can speak for St. Mary's, but certainly Temple Beit Hayam, and all of us, that we are concerned for the area that we do live in and the area that we love.
God bless you all. Peace.
Thank you.